Are you tired of spending hours sharing and sending offers to likers? Introducing Posher VA, the web program that will save you time and increase your sales. With Posher VA, you can automatically share your closet, send offers to likers, and schedule your share times, all with just a few clicks. Using code ELDUCHO, you can try Posher VA for 2 weeks for free, no credit card required. Posher VA is not just another program, it is your program. Say goodbye to manual sharing and hello to even more time in your business. Try Posher VA today using code ELDUCHO, ELDUCHO. Welcome to the Flip the Script podcast. I'm your host, Denali, and I'm a full-time reseller on eBay and Poshmark. My store and closet name is El Ducho, ELDUCHO, and you can find me on Instagram and YouTube as El Ducho Thrift. I'm very excited about this week's episode. I had the opportunity to interview a local friend of mine, and her name is Melissa. You can find Melissa on Instagram and YouTube under the username Vandy's Closet, and that's V-A-N-D-I-S, Closet. All of that information will be in the show notes for you. Melissa is a full-time reseller living in the Pacific Northwest. This past year, Melissa has gained a lot of attention on social media for posting a lot of her ThredUp sales. She essentially took ThredUp and made it a primary source of income for her this past year. However, with the recent changes that they've made, she's had to shift and adjust her full-time reselling business. So we talk about all of that and more, including her journey. This is a really great episode. I hope you all enjoy. Hi, Melissa. Thanks for being on the podcast with me.
Thank you so much for asking me.
Yes, I'm so excited to have you here and to have this conversation. You know, I always like to think about how I maybe know or have met a guest that's on the podcast. I like to reflect like the night before. And I'm pretty sure we just met at the Bins, right?
I thought we met before in the Seattle Live.
Wait.
Posh Party Live.
Was that when it was?
Yes. I think that's the very first time I ever met you. Or maybe, I don't remember if it was the Bins.
Was it?
I thought you, not that long afterwards at the Bins.
Wait, did you come to, I know, now we're thinking all of this off the cuff. We should have discussed this beforehand. Wait, did you, when I threw up, what is it called? Not the Posh Party Live. What's the other little Poshmark parties called?
Oh, the Posh and Sips?
Yeah, Posh and Sip. Did you come to the Posh and Sip that I threw?
No. I didn't even know you had one.
Oh, I did. Well, you would have been invited. Everyone was invited.
No, yeah. I had on the night before the Posh Party Live, I decided to buy a ticket because there were still tickets available and I bought one. And so I went.
Really? That's, gosh.
Yeah.
That, I feel like we've known each other longer than that.
Right?
Yeah, that's weird. Okay. Well, then since then, we've seen each other at the Bins.
Right.
A number of times.
I mean, We might, well, it was a year ago now. It was over a year ago now. So
I guess so. Wow. Like, I feel like I've known you longer than that. That's weird to think it was only a year.
Right. That's strange. I feel the same way. Yeah.
That's so strange. Well, I love it when we have randomly run into each other at the Bins because like, as you know, as a bin shopper, like when you're there, you're in the zone, you're digging. Right. And then all of a sudden you look up and you're like, oh, hey.
Yeah. Like, oh my God, I know you.
Right. Like you're here too.
It's so nice when you see someone that friendly face.
It is. It really is. Like as crazy as people think the outlet is, it's also this little small community of people, of regular shoppers. It's like, it's maybe like that show Cheers, right? Everybody knows your name.
Yeah, a little bit. Most people don't know my name.
Okay, that's true. Nobody knows each other's names, but we just know each other. We know that we know each other.
Right, right.
All right. Okay, well, to the listener, that's how Melissa and I know each other. But I'm excited to have this conversation with you because I've been, following your journey online. And I want to share this with anybody who doesn't know about you yet. So I guess to just jump right into it, Melissa, how and when did you first start reselling?
Well, if we go really far back, back in like 1996, 1997. I can't remember. I'm pretty sure it was 1996 that I had opened an eBay account. And I was helping my ex-boyfriend at the time. Well, he's my ex-boyfriend now. He's my boyfriend at the time. Sell G.I. Joes and comic books and those kinds of things online. And I remember we were using this really archaic digital camera. Like, I don't know. It was just really fun to do that. And it was a process back then. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I wish I would have stuck with it. Honestly, I didn't fully appreciate back then how people were making a full-time living doing that. And I didn't know about the bins, and thrifting to me at the time was considered kind of taboo because I kind of grew up with that thought that, oh, thrifting is for people that are not me. So, I mean, I grew up poor, which is weird that I have that thought process. Mm-hmm. But we shopped at Kmart. I would have been better off at thrift stores. but then later on, years later, I think I was 41 years old and read an article about somebody that was making a full-time living doing this on Poshmark. I never heard of Poshmark before. I knew eBay existed, but eBay was just in my brain. eBay was so hard to deal with, and I just didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. And then Poshmark, I downloaded that. I'm like, I can totally do this. So I started going to thrift stores. I didn't actually sell anything out of my own closet. I didn't feel like anything in my own closet was worth selling, or I wanted to part with it. So I'm like, I'm going to thrift stores, and I started buying things at like a thrift store that was like dollar Sundays. And I only got stuff that was a dollar, and I started putting it up there. And, you know, I digress. I did sell something from my own closet. It was some shoes we got in England the year before that didn't fit me right. And so I sold those, and they're Clarks, and they sold like 20 days later or something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, after that, I kind of got hooked, and I decided this is what I want to do. And at the time, I had a full-time job. So it was a transition over the years.
Okay. All right. So this is like spanning a few decades, because yeah. I say that because we're like around the same age. So you said that you were helping your ex-boyfriend sell stuff in like 96, 97. Mm-hmm. That triggers memories for me, because that's when I first started selling stuff on eBay as well. And similar to you, I look back on it and I'm like, oh my gosh, if I had only stuck with it.
Right.
Oh my God. You know, I don't want to say that I have regrets in life, but if I made a short list of regrets, that might be on there.
Definitely on mine.
Yeah. So do you remember, I know obviously it's been a while, but do you, you know, to I guess the listener, what do you remember about selling on eBay back in the day? Like the Wild West, or was it difficult, or does anything stand out to you from those memories?
I just remember not fully understanding what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And I just felt so out of my element. Like, I don't really get this. I don't think there was buy it now yet. I think it was only mm-hmm. auctions. And I just remember putting things up for like, am I putting it up for enough? Is it too much? Or cause there was no offer. Like, you couldn't make an offer on an auction other than just bidding on it back then. Mm-hmm. And I think we would only put up like maybe three or four pictures, because my ex-boyfriend wasn't very savvy when it came to technology. I was like magically more savvy than him, which was kind of funny. Back then, I'm like, I think about myself back then, I'm like, I was really kind of technically challenged back then. And it was just really funny. Like, he's like, here's the stuff I want to sell. So I would basically take the pictures and load it up on the internet. And I mean, using dial up was fun. I remember that.
Right. Waiting for that photo to like, just like inch along. Remember, like it would progress, like, yes. You know, show like 25% of the photo, then 30% of the photo.
I felt myself aging.
Right. Right. It's literally, yeah. Okay. So, you know, at that time when you were selling stuff, I mean, it sounds like you guys were just doing it for extra money, but was there anything that sold for a good amount of money where you thought like, oh, this is interesting?
I think the most, and I don't, my memory's really, really fuzzy from this long ago, I want to say that the most expensive thing was a G.I. Joe, and it sold for like $75. And I remember all right. thinking, oh my God. But it was one of the old ones, like from the 60s or something like that. He knew everything about G.I. Joe. I knew nothing about G.I. Joe. So he was literally be next to me while I was drafting it out. Like, what do you want to say about this? I don't know what to put in here. But yeah, there was one, but most of them I think sold for like anywhere from like 25 to like 35. I think mostly in that range, because most of them weren't rare.
Right.
He kept a lot of those. He had a collection of them.
Yeah, I mean, $75 for G.I. Joe. I'll take that every day.
Right? I know. I never look for G.I. Joes in the thrift. I probably should, but I still know nothing about them.
It's okay. You know, we have to choose our like genre or category of items that we want to sell. There's too much to learn out there. That's the problem. Okay, so let's now fast forward 2 decades. Mm-hmm. You don't become a full-time reseller back in the 90s. You just kind of did it for fun. You know, in that span of time, did you, you know, I guess I'm going to answer that ahead of time. You didn't really dabble in any other online platforms because you said it wasn't really until now. How many years ago from this point did you start with Poshmark?
Well, to go in between there a little bit, there was some flea market stuff. So in South, I live in Everett, and in South Everett, there was a flea market that would be there every Saturday. And so for a long time, we would go there sometimes to sell some of the G.I. Joes and comic books and some other knickknacks that he would like get. But so we did that for a little bit. But then it was like a drive-in movie theater that we turn into during the day a flea market. Mm-hmm. And so we did that for a little bit, but yeah, online. I had a previous business, and it was greeting cards. I was making greeting cards. I was selling them on Etsy like 4 years prior to starting a Poshmark. So I wasn't like a reseller at that point, but I was selling online. It's a hard market. It really is. Greeting cards are, a lot of them are digital, and most people like digital. We do digital now, so it's a lot easier. So that just didn't really take off for me. And then I had quit that four months prior to figuring out, reading that article about Poshmark. And then I was like, okay, this is going to get me to leave my full-time job, because I hated my job. So...
Wait, and what year was that you read the article?
It was in 2017.
Okay, so 2017, you're working a full-time job. What were you doing at the time?
A medical biller.
Okay, so you're working a full-time job, and you know, in these past 2 decades, you've dabbled in e-commerce, but never really figured out kind of what was going to stick for you in some ways, right? I mean, you've tried out selling, you know, you've done the flea markets, you did Etsy, you did eBay. You're kind of like, you're doing the sampler plate of like what reselling can look like.
I did have the sampler plate. That's true.
Right. And you read this article, and that's what clicks for you. So, you know, you read this article, and what'd you do? Like, did you immediately download Poshmark and run to the thrift store?
Well, I had downloaded Thrift Store, downloaded Poshmark, and I looked through it and, you know, kind of like just got a general overview and say, is this hard to use? And it was so easy to like browse through. Now it's changed so much in these last 3 years, but it was much simpler back in 2017. I think it was obviously much simpler before that, but I think it took me a week to go to a thrift store. Like in a week, from downloading it, I went to a thrift store and looked at some stuff. I didn't know what comps were. I had no idea how that worked. I just kind of picked up things that I thought looked cool, and then I just put them online. And I remember when I first started, I didn't have a real space in my house to take pictures. So I did it on my back porch, because it was April, like going into the summer, spring summer months. And so I was like, oh, I'll be fine out here, right? So I could only do it like a certain like span of time. I was doing it only on the weekends, because by the afternoon when I got home, it was too dark. Because, you know, Washington State, the sun doesn't like to stay out for very long.
Right.
But so I would take all my pictures like on Saturday and Sunday, and then I would try to post them throughout the week. And and that's pretty much just kind of how I got started. And I was hoping that eventually I could, in my head, of course, I had grandiose plans. I'm going to make a bunch of money right away. No, that didn't happen. So
what got you, you know, what did the journey to full-time look like for you? I mean, how many months or years between when you read that article about Poshmark, did you actually go full-time?
It was about 2 years of basically working two jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd work my full-time job. I'd come home. And at the time, for most of the 2 years, I had a 3-hour round trip commute because I commuted to downtown Seattle. So mm-hmm. I would take the bus because I'm not about to drive to Seattle every day and pay for parking. So I would spend about normally it was like an hour, but it became an hour and a half on the bus there, an hour and a half on the bus back. And so that would use that time to share my closet and try to make listings. And I would use my lunch hour to share my closet and drive listings. And I literally pretty much worked every waking moment for a while, partially because I didn't know what I was doing. So that's really hard when you don't know what you're doing and you're mm-hmm. still trying to figure it out. And I know way more than I know what I'm doing now, so which is great. But yeah, it was a kind of rough for those 2 years. When I look back, I was like, wow, there was a lot I would put into this.
Mm-hmm. So what do you feel like for you to go full time? Because I think a lot of people, you know, myself included, when they want to become a full time reseller, mm-hmm. you know, there's no clear cut answer, no one size fits all answer for
right.
when is it time to go full time, right?
Right.
But for you, in your experience, what was it that clicked for you? I have to imagine the financials were a big part of it.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think what really helped it is my husband works a full time job, so mm-hmm. and he works as a firewall technician for a company. Mm-hmm. And now he's a tech, but at the time he was customer service. And so he was trying to transition into the tech side of the business. And he finally did. And then when he did that, he got a big pay raise. And so mm-hmm. that really lessened the burden about how much I needed to make. Mm-hmm. I still need to make money. Like my money's not just 100% fun money. I still need to make money, but I don't need to make very much money, to be perfectly honest. So I'm in a good position that way that, I mean, if I don't work and I make just minimal, then it's okay. If I work like part-time and I just kind of bring in a part-time income, that's okay because we can afford that. But yeah, I mean, I know other people that depend 100% on their own income. And so it's a much harder transition at that point. I remember thinking and telling my husband this, I wish because at the time I was paid pretty good too. So, you know, I was making about $25 an hour, and I told my husband, I'm like, I wish I made minimum wage at this point, because it'd be so much easier to make that jump
mm-hmm.
than to lose $25 an hour full-time income.
Right.
And then, but once he got his raises, it really made up for a lot of the income that I lost when I left my job. Mm-hmm. And so I got his medical, which is great because that's a big thing. I mean, people stay with jobs. I have my best friend, she stays with her job because she can't afford to lose her medical. And it's a big thing.
Yeah, the benefits is a huge part of it. I mean, arguably, you know, people don't think of it, that number being added into their salary or hourly wage. But like you said, like making $25 an hour, yes. But then also you factor in like, what is your employer paying for your medical, right? And like, how much value does that add to your salary,
right?
Which is pretty significant.
Well, not to mention 401k that I had.
And time off and sick leave.
And, time off.
And I mean, a lot of different things.
Yeah. 3 weeks of paid time off is something I don't have now.
Right.
However,
what is that? I know my boss doesn't give me that.
I remember though being so jealous of my husband because he would always get more time off than me because he worked for a much smaller company, so they're much more generous about their benefits to their employees. Mm-hmm. And I just remember being so jealous. I'm like, you always get extra days off, but I end up having to work all these extra days that you don't have mm-hmm. to. And now I'm like, I don't have to work those days. I can take ties off with you now. It's actually really freeing at that point. But yeah, you need to really kind of, I don't think I did the correct way, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
To do it the correct way, get out of debt and get a savings. I mean, that would be the best way to go forward. For anyone that's wanting to go full time, get rid of your debt would probably be the biggest gift you will give to yourself. And I did not do that. So we're still paying off debt. I mean, not our house, because that's like, that's long-term debt, but you know, credit card debt, whatnot, we are still paying that off. But so a lot of my money largely goes to that. So that's good.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you said, sorry, I don't remember verbatim you just said, but about not doing it correctly. I think that's what you said.
Right.
You said, I don't know if I did this correctly. And feels like,
I didn't do this correctly.
Yeah. But to be honest with you, Melissa, like I would say similarly, I don't know if I did it correctly. And I've heard it from other people that I've interviewed. So it's like, what is the correct way? And maybe there is a correct way, but I mean, in your opinion, if somebody were to go full time, and of course, not every answer is one size fits all, but do you feel like there's a certain nest egg that people need to build up? Like, how many months' salary or whatever do you think people should have as a safety net?
I think 3 to 6 months would be safe, in my opinion. And I've heard a lot of other people that do have like financial backgrounds and whatnot, and they do say that as well. A lot of them say 6 months, but I think if you had like, especially like during times in our current situation, that if people had that, maybe when sales are down, it won't hurt you as bad. And also for that, because retail is it's a roller coaster. It's not steady all the time. I mean, at least it's not in my experience. In my experience, there's highs and there's lows. There's months I do fantastic. There's in my opinion, I do fantastic. And then there's months I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to have to get a job.
Right. A job in addition to my job. Yeah, I agree with you. And similarly, I've heard other people say that, and I would agree. 3 to 6 months, paying down debt. I mean, there's certain steps that, you know, if people are searching for what is the right answer for when you can go full time, I think that those are some great guidelines. Yeah. As close as you can get to it, you know, secure your health insurance.
Right.
And I mean, yeah, start a 401k or a savings plan, retirement savings plan for your future. I think there's certain steps that you can take, but let's be honest, you know, once you jump into full-time reselling, you're so focused on just like turning a profit.
Right.
You know, if you don't plan those things, those other things ahead of time, they are going to fall by the wayside.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So when you went full-time, I mean, what did it look like for you? Because I know that, you know, when you're somebody who's been working, you know, a quote unquote traditional 9-to-5 or whatever job for so many years, and then going to this self-employed lifestyle, it sometimes is a little jarring. I mean, it's nice, but it's jarring. So what did it look like for you those first, I don't know, 3 to 6 months?
Yeah, I guess it was a little jarring, because I realized, oh my God, I need to create my own structure now. Like I have to create some kind of structure, and I still have not done that good of a job building structure for myself. But that, I'm kind of more focused about that, especially going into 2021. I want to make sure that my life is more structured, because I need to get more bang for my buck. And in the first like 6 months, I did not spend my time wisely. I know that. And I would just like, oh, I'll list here and list willy nilly. I watch a lot of YouTube. And I was like, really watching it. I'm not doing work. And it's easy to get sucked into things, because you don't have like a job or a boss saying, okay, well, Melissa, you're not keeping up with your metrics. And there's no one looking at your metrics but you. So you're going to have to be a very good boss to yourself and make sure they, I mean, and that's something I'm working on myself, is like, I need to be a better boss to myself and make myself do things in a efficient way.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree with you. There's a lot of self-discipline that comes with this job. And if you are not a self-disciplined person, it's going to be a struggle. You're going to learn, you're either going to learn how to do it or not. So
yeah, exactly. And I failed a few times.
Arguably I fail often. So
and I actually think failing is a good thing. And I know there's a lot of people out there that don't like failing and mm-hmm. honestly fail forward. And it's funny because I would never have had that thought process had I not worked for the hospital that I worked for. I worked for them for 8 years. And that was, they use the Toyota production system in their hospital model. And it, Toyota really is about like failing forward. And it's like, huh, that's really such a good idea. And before that, I always thought failure was such a shameful thing, you know, like, oh, I failed. Mm-hmm. How did I do this? But no, you want to fail. The more you fail, the more successful you'll be in the end, I think.
Agreed. I like that. Okay. So it's, you know, you've been full-time now for, if I'm doing my math correctly, it's just about a year, a little over a year?
A little over a year. Cause a year was in, well, when did I leave? I think I left my job. And I can't remember. Oh yeah, it's over a year now. It was June.
Okay. It
was June, a year ago June.
So just about a year and a half now.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's you know, where do you sell currently? What platforms are you still just on Poshmark or do you sell elsewhere?
Well, I am on Poshmark, but I did also go over to eBay. So mm-hmm. I do eBay. I still have not figured out eBay, but I'm determined to do it. I mean, I make some sales, but I don't make as many sales as like I want to.
Mm-hmm.
Poshmark is still my little breadwinner, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it does the best for me. But now I do Mercari too. I've added in Mercari only because it's easy, because I use a thing like Vendue or List Perfectly, those kind of things.
Yeah.
I currently use Vendue and it has allowed me to really cross list in a way more efficient way. Because mm-hmm. at first when I was cross listing to eBay, I was doing it all on my phone, which is so hard. Mm-hmm. I will never go back to listing anything on my phone ever again, like ever. And so I spanned out to Mercari and I haven't completely cross listed everything over to Mercari. I think I just need to be very consistent about Mercari. Mm-hmm. And now I've branched out to Kittizen recently because that also got added to it. And you can add mama clothes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, well, I have a lot of women's clothing. I have some kids, but mostly it's women's clothing. And so I'm adding those what I can to that. And I also know that Kittizen will also cross list to their Facebook marketplace for you. So
oh, wow.
You kind of cross listing twice when you cross list to Kittizen. So I'm going to give it like a couple months, like 2-3 months and see how Kittizen can work for me. But I'm going to try to be very consistent because it's hard to know if a platform works for you or not if you're not consistent. And that's my biggest problem is I'm not consistent all the time.
Gotcha. So since you've been cross listing to Kittizen, have you, because of that Facebook marketplace cross-listing that you're talking about, have you noticed more sales because it's kind of two platforms in one?
Well, it's been too soon, so it's been like
okay.
a week.
Okay.
I literally added like a week ago, so I don't have sold anything yet, but I've only had like maybe 45 items on there now.
Got it. Okay, we'll update us soon. Right. we'll check back with you in a year.
Yeah, check back with my Instagram. I'll start posting it there.
Okay.
If I can make any sales.
Okay. And I know another platform you sell on or have sold on,
yes.
which is ThredUp.
Yes.
So talk to me about ThredUp. When did you first start selling on there and kind of what has your journey looked like selling on that platform?
Well, I first got signed up in June of 2019. Mm-hmm. And but I didn't really, I sent in like one box back then. Mm-hmm. And then I sent in like one box in July. And then I think like a couple in August. But it wasn't until September that I really started taking it seriously. I'd taken a course.
No, it's fine. Go ahead. Chriselle's been on the podcast.
Yeah, I'd taken her course. And it really kind of, there was so much misinformation about ThredUp and about why people weren't making any money. So I didn't try them for the first couple of years of reselling. I wish I would have tried them sooner because I started really doing it right after they cut off their upfront offers.
Mm-hmm.
And literally one box got processed, like my first box I sent in, I think in June, didn't actually get processed until August, the beginning of August. Mm-hmm. And it was the end of June when I sent it in. So to be fair, and it got processed like the day they were stopping that. So I literally got two things I was able to get upfront payments for.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of it was just all consignment, which is fine. But then I was finding like, oh my God, you can up your prices and you can get way more money on ThredUp for Chico's or Ann Taylor and Loft. And I've been selling that stuff for really cheap on Poshmark or mm-hmm. eBay. So I was like, oh my God, you can make so much more money. That's now not the case. But, right. But you know, for that, you know, year, I mean, I made about $20,000.
Nice.
And that's not bad for just sending some stuff in. Now there was a little bit of management, you know, when it comes to managing your inventory with ThredUp, because they were making mistakes with, you know, how they listed, like they would mark the wrong brand and they would mark it for $38. You're like, no, this mm-hmm. was like $300. Don't yeah. mark it for $38.
Right. So yeah. So it's not really, it's not a set it and forget it.
No. And so I think that's what people had previously, they had thought it was, right? They would send in their items and they were like, oh, set it and forget. And I saw that like on Instagram. And then they report back and it's like, oh, well, I got like $50 for my whole box mm-hmm. after it sold. Or they didn't reclaim their stuff. And like, oh, you know, I lost some stuff because they didn't reclaim it in the span time they were given to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And because of those posts and because of that information out there, I was like, no, I'm not doing that. I mean, why would I do that? Why would I lose money on my stuff?
Right.
But that wasn't it, just because they didn't understand how to use a platform at the time. And mm-hmm. then, you know, when you do understand how to do it, then I was like, okay, I'm all in. I'm going to send a bunch of stuff. And then I was sending a majority of the stuff that I was getting that, you know, had brands on them and had sizes on them and weren't like stained or ripped or pilly in any way. And I would like send them that. And, you know, it was kind of glorious for a while.
And yeah. And it sounds like the key to all of it for you, which, you know, is what other people weren't doing, is right. adjusting prices.
Right.
And making corrections when yes. there would be an issue with the brand, like if they had mislabeled it or whatever the case was. And then I think another factor that I know, another method that I know about, which I believe I know you've done, is sending items in multiple times.
Right. Yes. I would reclaim and I'd resend them. And I did that because I'm like, well, I was mainly doing a test. Say, will these things sell eventually? How many times would I have to send them in? And most things I had to send them in less than three times to get them to sell. Because sometimes it was just a timing issue. Like that person that wanted that item just wasn't looking at the time it was there. Because it's only there for 60 or 90 days. Well, in the beginning it was 84 days for everything. But mm-hmm. then they went to 60 and 90 day time limits. And most of the things I sent in had 90 day time limits. So I didn't want to abandon them. And mm-hmm. I thought, you know, these things probably will make money eventually. And I was right. Most things did make money eventually. So my inventory was turning over, you know, pretty often. There's some things I have that I started off with, but there's not many. So that was always nice that you can do that. But
yeah. And then just to the listener and maybe somebody who's not familiar with this method of using ThredUp. So basically what you were doing kind of two different ways. One, you were reclaiming items that were about to expire off the website right. and have them sent back to you. And or I'm also guessing that you did this, which is perhaps they returned items back to you and said, oh, we're not going to accept these from you at this time.
Right. Get the return insurance.
Right. You did the return assurance and you took both these returned items that ThredUp said they didn't wanted and the reclaimed items mm-hmm. and you boxed it all up and you sent it back in.
Now, the stuff that got sent back to me in the beginning, I would relook over all that. And in the end, I was relooking over the stuff they sent back to me when I was reclaiming as well, because things would get dirty or damaged mm-hmm. or whatnot. So especially the stuff that you got returned to you from the return assurance, because there's a reason, not always, but there's a good amount of time that there's a reason that they said no. So there was something I overlooked, and mm-hmm. that's 50% of the time. If I got it back in that part means I missed something. And yeah, I miss a stain in the armpit, or I miss like deodorant marks in the armpits, or I miss a stain somewhere. And I didn't always look at it under my studio lighting, you know, like my mm-hmm. big lights I use for photographing. I didn't always look under those conditions. And so I would miss some things. So I started doing that towards like the end. I would bring into my office and I would look at everything, because I was packaging down in my basement, which does not have the best lighting, to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. But when I started doing that, I got less back and I got more 100% accepted. Or like 90% accepted. And then some of the things I got back, there was nothing wrong with them. I don't know if they just didn't like the style or, and I think that's what it came down to. Cause I mean, I got things back that were season appropriate. I didn't always send in things that were season appropriate, but a lot of the times I get stuff back, it was season appropriate. I'm like, why? You took the tank top, but you didn't take the sweater. Why? But there was nothing wrong with the sweater. I just don't think the person liked the sweater.
Right.
It's accepted. It's like, okay.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times, whether it be with ThredUp, consignment stores, buy sell trade stores, whatever in general, right. I think that it is smart that to send stuff in again, because you're at the mercy of the person who's picking through your items. Right. And they might say no, but if you take those, for instance, if you go to a buy sell trade store, mm-hmm. but if you go in next week to a different associate,
right,
they might say yes.
Yeah. And most of the time I'd send stuff right back and then they say yes. I'm like, okay, I don't know what was the problem with these before. Right. But okay.
Yeah.
And that's when I was thinking, okay, they must not like the style, or maybe, or also there's another factor that I didn't consider for a while, but they will also reject things that they have too many of. So if they had too many of this style of dress, maybe they were rejecting it because they had too many on hand and they don't want to be flooded with that. So they kind of controlled their own market that way, which is smart, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's a factor.
Is there a sale on ThredUp that sticks out to you that was like, you know, maybe like your biggest sale?
Yes, it was a leather jacket that mm-hmm. I had never heard of the brand, and I can't remember the brand right now. But it, because I don't think that brand would sell for on any other marketplace for the same amount. It was up there for $315, and I got 80% of that. And it sold in 24. And the funny thing was, that jacket I had sent in before, and I didn't like, I don't know why, but I didn't follow up on this, and they had listed it for $54 the first time it was sent in,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't sell. So I reclaimed it. I'm like, okay. And then it sent it back and they listed again for $54, and I decided, well, I'm gonna look up online and see how much does this really go originally. And actually mm-hmm. $54 is that what they labeled it as, the original retail price. So I could market for way less than that. So I looked it up and like, oh no, this actually was probably sold originally for $450. So I told them that. I said, hey, I did some research and this should be up there for $450. And then they changed it. And that got harder over time, them changing it just because I told them to.
Right.
But this time it worked. So I was like, magic. I put it up there for that amount and it sold in 24 hours. I'm like, holy crap.
I know. I remember it. Well, cause you, in the past have posted a lot of your, ThredUp sales.
Yes.
You know, you would post them on your Instagram feed. And I often remember you posting leather jackets. I feel like that was something that did well for you.
There was a few. I don't think I sold that many, probably about 10. I mean, there's not that many of them, but yeah, I mean, I think I got some, I got $200 for a Wilson's leather jacket. I think I got 160. I think it sold for 200, but yeah, I mean, I don't even think Wilson leather jackets went for, I mean, they were priced at $450 because we all know about Wilson leather and how they would always be on sale.
Right. They're always going out of business.
Always. Oh, that's right. It wasn't always on sale. It was always going out of business. That's right. I forgot. Yeah, exactly. They're always having a going out of business sale, but never actually going out of business. And yeah, I don't even think this jacket probably sold for probably more than $100 originally. And I'm like, huh, someone wants this. Someone wanted it really bad.
I know. When I saw you post about Wilson's leather jackets, I was like, what sort of sorcery is Melissa doing over there? I know. It made me want to pick them up, even though I was like, why? I don't think this is a good idea, Denali.
I mean, you know, perfectly honest, I think the post I would make about ThredUp that got the most engagement on Instagram, mm-hmm. were like the $30 loft sales.
Yeah.
But I made $30. Like, if right. it sell for $30, I made $30 off of it. Or a Chico's, something that sold, and I made $40 off of it, or something like that. And it's like,
yeah,
people are like, what? I mean, because those things you find all the time.
Yes. Yeah, no, I remember that. I mean, it felt like you were selling ice to Eskimos, right?
Right, I was.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way that we could do that necessarily or yeah. all the time on platforms like eBay and Poshmark, Mercari, stuff like that. It's just too common. But
right.
they should be common, I guess, on ThredUp as well. But so, you know, obviously, you know, anybody who's been in the reseller community for the past 6 months has known about changes that have been happening on ThredUp with right. ThredUp's platform. So how are you using ThredUp now? Is it the same as it was a year ago? What's your thought process?
Oh, it's very, very different now. Okay. So they made a lot of changes, and a lot of the changes they did cuts us out completely. It really does. Mm-hmm. Not 100% completely, but like 90% of what I would ever send to them is no longer going to go to them, because I would not make any money, basically. Yeah. So how I'm going to use them in the future is I'm going to just send them stuff that I just don't want to see anymore. I'm not going to do return assurance. I'm not going to do expedited. And they've limited the expedited to like 2 per seller per month. I know that's temporary and I don't know when they'll lift that, but I won't mm-hmm. actually care about that because I'm not going to actually ever use it, because it wouldn't be worth it anymore.
Right.
Because I'm just going to send them stuff that I never want to see again. And if they just take the whole box and I don't get anything out of it, I was going to give it away to charity anyway. So that works for me. But yeah, I mean, they made it so they penalized you if you raised your prices over 50% of what they price it as. And then you can't predict how they're going to price something, because they'll right. sometimes price things that were originally retailed for $300. They can be new with tags and they'll use their algorithm. And I'm using air quotes.
Yeah.
I know their algorithm is real, but I think they kind of use this as a cop out a little bit.
Yeah.
And they will say, well, our algorithm says that this specific brand and the style or whatever the factors are that goes into this says this will only sell for $25. Mm-hmm. Well, if something is listed for $25, you as the seller are making basically $1, $1.50, I think. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it equates out to be. And then at that point, unless you bought it for a penny or got it for free, you're not making any money. And why would you do that? So if you had a $300 dress, new tag, you could probably sell that for $50 on Poshmark. So it's like, there's no real way to gauge how they're going to price things. And they're mm-hmm. not very transparent about that. And because they're not transparent about how they price their items, and I can't predict it, I can't send them stuff on purpose. I can't thrift things for them. I was sourcing something specifically to send to them and not sell on my own. Now I'm slowly reclaiming all my items as I can, because they also stopped you from doing that. They stopped mm-hmm. you from reclaiming your items except in the last 7 days. And then after the 7 days are up, you cannot get your item back. They own your item. But, you know, it's funny because I see posts about people saying, okay, so my item, I didn't get it back. I didn't want it back, but I still see it on their site, still trying to be sold.
Mm-hmm.
And it's past the, so I thought that was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they say they don't have all the space to store things. Now they right. just own it. So I don't know. I don't know how to feel about that part of it.
Yeah. But
I had seven boxes that were waiting to get processed, and mm-hmm. I asked for them back. So you can ask for them back if you have
things that
have not been processed yet and you want them back. And the reason why I did that, because they would process under the old rules, because they were sent in prior to 11/9/2020. And that's when your bag had to be tracking at 11/9 and going forward for the new price pricing to affect you. Oh yeah, I didn't actually finish that. So when you did adjust your prices 50% above what they wanted you to price it as, if you ever wanted that item back, they're going to charge you $5.99 per item.
I know.
That's I'm like, what?
Insane.
That is insane. I think that's super insane that to do that. I think there should be some kind of cap on yeah. the amount of items, like maybe, you know, $10 for your bag or something. Fine. Okay. Maybe people could deal with that, but per item and not knowing how they're going to price it. And you can only go, if they price it for $20, you can only price it for $30.
Mm-hmm.
That to me, I didn't like it. So that really cuts out resellers and cuts out anyone that wants to have it as part of their business. And it just kind of puts it for people who don't really want to take the pictures and list it on Poshmark or eBay or whatnot on their own. They're just mm-hmm. clearing out their own closets, basically.
So, I mean, basically what it sounds like is it took, you know, a major stream or, you know, a big stream of your income away mm-hmm. from you.
It did. It did, actually. So now I'm listing everything. And the reason why I really wanted to start using them is because I have inflammatory arthritis and that affects my hands mm-hmm. a lot. And so it really, some days really suck for me. And I will wake up, basically I'll feel crippled because I can't move my hands. And so those are the days I don't do anything. Like I just have to take ibuprofen and wait for it to be over. And it only lasts a couple days. Luckily, I'm lucky with that. Mm-hmm. It's not deterioration of my joints or anything like that. Like it's not hurting my joints, which is great, but it hurts me when it's happening, when I have a flare. Right. So I was trying to like, oh, can I make money without having to list so much? And mm-hmm. yeah, during that time, but now I can't. But now I'm actually starting to, I'm going to be sending some stuff to the Real because I do have a bunch of stuff that I had previously purchased during when there was a Luxe program and I needed nicer items to go in these boxes where I could put everything else so you can get processed for free. But
right.
then they took away the Luxe program and then I'm like, oh, I have these items. Well, I'm going to send them all to the Real, well, the ones that they'll accept and we'll see how that goes. So, I mean, they don't accept a lot of lower end items, which, you know, kind of sucks, but I understand why they wouldn't. So it needs to be worth their time as well. And I know you can't set your prices with the Real, but I decided, you know, I thought about it. If it's 40%, because mm-hmm. I think that's what you end up making if it was listed for under $200, right?
Right.
I think you end up making 40%. And like, I worked off 40% of like $25. It's still pretty good amount of money. Right. So, yeah, I'm going to send some things into them because most of the things I got were cheap. They weren't expensive.
Right. Thank God for the bins.
Right. Right. And then, but I don't even know how viable that is right now. So I'm working on contingency plans for that.
Yeah. You mean in terms of shopping there?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Have you been back?
3 times.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. Okay. I want to move on to my regularly scheduled questions because I don't want to run out of time for these. But okay. So tell me about your workspace. Do you have an office? Do you have a storage unit? Do you work out of the home? What does it look like for you?
I do work out of my home and I have an office. I have a room that I use as my office that no mm-hmm. one else goes into. I have a cat, so she's not allowed into my office as well. And it's funny, when I have the door open, she walks by, she looks at me like she wants to come in, but she knows she can't and she doesn't. So, but it's mostly closed. But I do have a basement downstairs as well. That's where I store all my inventory. I have 1,000 square feet that's largely mine that I use. Like there's maybe 100 feet of it we use for storage of our personal stuff, but the rest of it is my reselling business is downstairs where I store everything. Awesome. And where I store all my money pile. So that I'm listing right now.
Got it. Okay. So that's where you do all of your photographing.
Actually, no. Oh, I do all my photographing in my office.
Okay. And the office is not in the basement.
No, my office is in the main level of the house.
Okay, so you've got your office on the main level, and mm-hmm. then downstairs you've got the 1,000 square foot basement.
Right.
Which I'm insanely jealous of. so what's down there is where just you're storing inventory?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's an unfinished basement, so it really looks like a murder should be happening down there. It's so scary. I used to take my pictures down there. And if you look at my early YouTube videos, you'll see my basement in the background. And it's like, I look at those, I'm like, oh my God, it's so kind of scary down there.
That's hilarious.
But one day we want to raise our house and we want to get it finished. And so it looks nicer.
Okay, gotcha. All right. Well, we look forward to that YouTube video.
Right.
Okay, so thinking about your business and how it's, you know, evolved over these past few years,
right?
What do you feel like right now? What do you feel like are the biggest challenges you face?
Well, my biggest challenges are, well, listing consistently, like I said, and blocking out my time. And I need to really start doing that so I can focus, not have YouTube playing, not have interruptions. Because mm-hmm. My husband, he works from home too, but he works out of the bedroom. So he'll mm-hmm. come in here any given moment. He's like, hey, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, look, I'm working. I'm in the flow. So mm-hmm. he doesn't do that as much anymore. But it sometimes I wish I had an office that wasn't at home, because yeah. I do get interrupted by, you know, home life. So
yeah,
that's my biggest problem, I think, is being interrupted by that.
Yeah. It can be challenging. I mean, that's like, it's a double-edged sword when you have your business out of your home. I mean, it's nice because you can just wake up and start working. Right. And then at the same time, it's like, oh, let me move this load of laundry and maybe I'll take a shower now. And all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, I don't think I've worked in the past 2 hours.
Right. Oh yeah. I find that, like, I'll be sitting in front of my computer and I'm like, what have I been doing? Like, I have no idea what I've been doing for 2 hours. But also, if you have an office, like, I'm so jealous of you, because you have an office outside of your home, like, it forces you to get dressed every day.
It does, which sucks. Just kidding. I don't know though, Melissa, my version of getting dressed is putting on leggings and a t-shirt. So arguably I'm just trading night pajamas for day pajamas.
I think I do the same thing though.
Okay. All right. Good. Leggings and a t-shirt, please never go out of style.
Right.
I don't know if it's in style, but whatever version of style that is, please never leave. So.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, this year has been an interesting year, a very challenging year for a lot of people and a lot of businesses. I know it's really hard to predict right now what the future will look like, but you know, do you have thoughts or goals or plans for this next year? I would say for the remainder of the year, but let's be honest, there's only a few weeks left in it.
Right.
but, you know, do you have thoughts, goals, plans for 2021, or where you'd like to see the future of your business going?
I do. And 2021 specifically, I have plans for. I am currently trying to list everything in my basement. I need to get through my death pile or my money pile, whichever one you like to use. I like money pile. But I refer back to the old term because it's the one I'm used to. But I'm currently listing that because I'm going to use that to fund a pallet, because I'm going to go to pallets.
Mm-hmm.
Because I decided for me, that's the best move for me and my business. And that will be how I level up, because I do have the space. So once I get rid of a bunch of stuff, and I'm trying to use eBay auctions now to kind of like get rid of some stuff that I know is just not moving.
Yeah.
Just to clear it out so I can have the money. Because currently what I do with my business money is 50% goes to my husband and 50% I keep. And so I keep to reinvest into the business. And so we pay bills and whatever with the other 50% of it. And so I'm going to save up for that. And then I'm going to start doing that probably in the spring. And then I'm going to go from that.
That's exciting. And when you say pallets, you're referring to liquidation.
Yes. Yes. I'm not going to. Yeah. I'm going to for liquidation pallets. Absolutely.
Exciting. Yes. Well, cool. When you said 50% goes to my husband, I was like, wait, like, he's your landlord?
No, I mean, I'll be transparent. I'm bad with money. I'm terrible with money. So my husband is not terrible with money. So
got it.
It's a really good partnership for me.
He's the accountant in the relationship.
But I do all the taxes at the end of the year, which is funny because he doesn't get taxes. I'm like, I can do the taxes. I've been doing
taxes. Oh, that is funny.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we all have our roles.
Right.
Right.
I know firsthand how exhausting it can be to manage all the tasks in my reselling business, like listing, bookkeeping, and more, but I've found a solution that has given me back my time and allowed me to grow my business, hiring a virtual assistant. And now I want to share that solution with you. That's why I've created an online course called Hiring a Virtual Assistant for Your Reselling Business. With this course, you'll learn everything you need to know to find, train, and manage a virtual assistant like a pro. And because I want to make this course accessible to everyone, I'm offering a special coupon code, FLIPTHESCRIPT, that gives you $10 off at checkout. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your reselling business to the next level. Sign up now at hiringava.com and let's enjoy the freedom and fun of growing our businesses together. Again, you can sign up at hiringava.com.
All right. Okay. So my last question for you, Melissa, mm-hmm. is what advice would you give yourself when you were first starting out?
Do not compare yourself to other people. Amen. That is such a big problem. I mean, I did that for like the first like 6 months. I remember I got depressed. Like I actually quit for a while. Like It was about four months into it. I actually quit for about 5 months. Mm. Because I got so hung up on people on Instagram, and it's not the packages, you know, people get mad about the package pictures. That doesn't really bother me. Right. I mean, none of it bothers me now because I have a whole different outlook on it. But at the time, people would be like, I'm selling this. And I'm like, I can't even find that. I don't even know what that is. You know?
Right.
And then I felt so depressed because I wasn't making a lot of money. And you're mm-hmm. not necessarily going to make a lot of money. Or there'd be people that they just started out like a week ago and they've already made more than you did in the last 2 months. And right. like, what am I doing wrong? What am I actually missing? And it's just everyone learns at their own pace and you have to allow yourself that. And not everyone has the same knowledge. And that's yeah. also a problem. I came into this with zero knowledge. Like I didn't have any knowledge of brands. I shopped at Target and Old Navy. That's it. Oh, yeah. Sometimes if I was being fancy, I'd go to Macy's. That's it.
Right. No, I agree with you. I mean, right. that is so often what guests on this podcast have said. I would say that's like 60 to 75% of people I ask this question to say, don't yeah. compare yourself to others. And it is the number one hardest thing to do. Especially right. if you're on social media, right.
Right.
then you're going to be able to do that. So, you know, because you look at what other people are doing. And like you said, everybody comes into this with at different places.
Right.
Some people have different knowledge than other people do. I've interviewed people on this podcast who went to fashion school.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Oh yeah.
You can't compete with somebody who knows fabrics and textiles better than you. You know what I mean? Right. They know quality, and that's because of a path that they chose in their life. And mm-hmm. you can't put yourself, you know, pit yourself up against that because you got a communications degree and not a fashion degree. You right. know what I mean?
And now I look at those people and I'm like, what can I gain from this person?
Yes.
What can I learn from them, from their experience? I'm going to keep following them. I'm going to keep seeing what they're doing because I want to know what I can use, what they're doing, and kind of institute it in my own way, in my yes. own business.
Agreed. That is exactly, that's how people need to shift it. Yeah. Shift away from comparing your business against theirs and look at these other people. And I tell people, I go cherry pick it. Like that's what I've done in my business. Like mm-hmm. cherry pick the things that you like that some people do.
Right.
And adopt that into your own business and try it out. And it doesn't right. mean that that becomes your business. You should always be changing and, you know, upgrading and doing different things in your, and trying new things out. And, you know, this didn't work. Okay, well, let's go back to this. Oh, I see this now. Let's try that. There's so many different ways to resell.
Right.
That, you know, you don't need to, you never should try and replicate 100% of what somebody else is doing.
And especially,
I was just going to say, especially because, you know, we all live in different parts of the country. We have mm-hmm. different, you know, we have access to different brands in different parts of the country. I remember when I first started reselling and everybody was like, I don't know what brands they would talk about. Like maybe like show me your muumuu. And I was like, we never see that here. Like Melissa and I are basically neighbors. Like, we don't see that up here. That's just not a brand. Or like Vineyard Vines. We don't see that here. Like, not until it came to our Targets.
Right. I was just going to say that. Not until it was in Target.
Not until it was in Target would we ever see that brand. No. And so for people like Melissa and I to become so focused, laser focused on finding Show Me Your Moomoo in our stores, we're going to miss out on 100 other brands that would sell really well.
And I did that for a while. I did. I got laser focused on Show Me Your Moomoo. And I started going to every thrift store I could think of. I'm like, can I find this guy? I couldn't find it anywhere.
Right.
I went to, I don't know, tens of, I can't say hundreds, but I went to tens of thrift stores. I'm like, why is this nowhere?
Right.
No, just not a popular brand here.
Right. Or, you know, you think of like Spell and the Gypsy.
Yeah, I've never found that.
I've never found it either, but there are places that people are going to find it. But guess what? It's not where me and Melissa live.
Right. One day I want to take a road trip when I can do that.
Exactly. Right. And that's the cool part is like, yeah, if you eventually are able to travel and thrift at some point, or if you go on a vacation and you have the opportunity to thrift, that's where it's really cool because you can be exposed to, you know, different types of clothing, different types of garments, you know, especially if you're in warmer climates, you're going to find that, you know, where Melissa and I are, we can find North Face, Columbia all day, every day. Not a problem.
And that's why I love haul videos, because even if they're in different parts of the country, I love listening to people's haul videos and just hearing the brands. I don't necessarily need to see what they're showing. I just want to hear what they're selling things or their What Sold videos even. And then, because that really came in play when I was at a Goodwill in a small town that I don't normally go to. And I found Double D Ranch jacket that was it was in the sweaters. I'm like, that's not a sweater, but I think someone was trying to hold it. I think someone was trying to hide it for the tag sale, but I bought it. So they didn't find it again. And then I sold it for $100 in 24 hours. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's where, again, right? Cherry pick. Get what you can out of the information that other people share with you, but definitely do not compare yourself.
Yep. I compare myself to me. So how well did I do last month? How well could I do this month? I am my only competition. Everyone else is my coworker.
Yes. Yes, Melissa, I love that. And it takes a while for any one of us to get there, but doesn't it feel amazing to be in this spot now where you're only comparing yourself to yourself?
Oh my God, it's so freeing. Yeah, because I would cry at some of these posts. I'm like, I'm not doing this. And it's like, now I look at those same posts and I'm like, oh my God, you go. I'm so excited for you. And I need to figure out what you did so I can try to figure out how that would work for me.
Yep, exactly. I love it. I'm the same way. I'm the same way. And I'm so excited we're both there. So
yes, me too.
Well, thank you so much, Melissa, for being on the podcast with me. This was so much fun. Feel like thank I got you. To know you just a little bit better.
Yes, definitely. It's been so long since I've even talked to you.
I know, exactly. Well, that's the part I miss is that us just randomly bumping into each other at the bins and talking shop. But hopefully those days return, you know, in 2021 or, you know, we can randomly bump into each other at our outlets now. We're restricted by an hour, but but all right. Well, I will talk with you soon, my friend. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Hey there. Thanks for tuning into the Flip the Script podcast. I wanted to take a quick moment to express my gratitude for your continued support. As a listener, you play a crucial role in the success of this podcast. And there are so many ways you can help out, and I'd love to share a few with you. For starters, you can support the podcast with a monthly donation as low as 99 cents at flipthescriptpodcast.com. Every little bit counts. And if you want to show your love even more, don't forget to subscribe and leave a 5-star review on your favorite podcasting platform. I read every review and really appreciate those who've left reviews already. And last but not least, be sure to check out the affiliate links in the show notes. There is a small kickback that is received from any purchases that you might make. And of course, follow flipthescript.pod on Instagram. It's also a great way to stay up to date on the latest episodes and behind the scenes content. Thank you again for being a part of the Flip the Script community. I couldn't do it without you.
Thank you again to Melissa for being on this week's episode of the podcast. I had so much fun just talking with a local friend again, somebody that I see at my local Goodwill outlet. It was just so nice to reconnect in that way. But it was also great hearing about your journey. There's definitely parts of your journey that I didn't know about. And thank you for being so candid about your plans with ThredUp moving forward. Hopefully it will be helpful to people who are listening. If you'd like to follow Melissa on social media, you can do so by finding her on Instagram and YouTube under the username Vandy's Closet, V-A-N-D-I-S, Closet. And again, all of that information will be in the show notes for you. If you are enjoying the podcast, it does run on listener support, and I so appreciate those who have contributed in the past year to making the podcast continue to move forward. I've just recently started a Patreon group for the podcast, and I'm adding value to it in ways that I can. And so what you get by subscribing or joining the Patreon is access to bonus audio content. And so that is the seventh question. I always ask six questions in the podcast, but there will be a rotating seventh question, which you can go listen now to see what Melissa has to say. We had a good conversation regarding that. Additionally, I am going to be looking to open up the podcast for submissions for people to have their stories shared with others. And I will be releasing that information on the Patreon group this next week. So if you'd like to join, you can sign up at patreon.com/flipthescript. And I will put all that information in the show notes for you. I hope you guys are all having a wonderful mid-December. I can't believe that the holidays are only a couple of weeks or a week away from now. Yikes, that's too crazy to even think about. I hope that you're having some sales. It's being, you know, hopefully a fruitful time for you, especially if you have new tags items. It tends to be a great time of the year for that. But in the meantime, keep on listing and keep on selling.